You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 129.
I knew it.
All right, I'm done. Leave it in. I got it on my
screen. Hello and welcome again to the keyboardiest episode of the Nasty Cast you will ever hear, as episode 129, the Keyboard Cast, with Van Lee, the Vandalizer.
That's right. That's my professional wrestling name. And of course, I'm a heel. I'm a bad guy because let's be honest. There's no way I would ever be a good guy. But I do have a question for you guys. I don't know if you can hear it. Can you? Is it really loud for you guys?
I hear silence.
No, it's the island sounds, the jungle noise, or the island noises, because I'm, of course, enjoying a delicious Capri Sun on this warm July evening. So I don't know if you can also hear the spit turning with the hog being roasted, because let's face it, it's very islandy here with my Capri Sun.
You didn't poke the straw at the back, did you?
Fortunately, not this time, but I've done that many times.
God, that's
or you squeeze it when you poke the straw and it just blasts you in the face with whatever fruit juice it is.
Oh. It's the worst.
And that other voice that you hear is Robo the Night Train Mim.
Yes, brother. What's up, guys? Capri Suns all around.
You're gonna have to explain this business then. What's the Robo story?
Okay, so the Robo comes from when my wife and I bought our first house, and we go to sign the papers, and you know when you sign papers on something like that, you have your full legal name on there because it is kind of an important thing that you're signing your name to. And so we sit down to sign the million paper stack of mortgage documents. And
I thought you were going to say $1 million home.
Oh, I wish. And so I look at the front page, and so the realtor says everything looked good, and we're looking, and like, oh yeah, we're excited. You know, it's our first house. We're fired up. And so I look down, and my given name obviously is Ronald. And so I look down, and someone has decided to spell my name as Robald through the entire flipping document.
Oh,
so
no.
I tell them that, well, this could be a problem because it's a legal binding document. And they said, well, you can do one of two things. You can either send this back, we can redo this, and it's going to take a couple of weeks to get this all typed up again. Or you can go through and you can cross out your name, write your correct name, and initial that you're the one that made the correction, and we can get this done today. So every time through that document where it said Robald, I had to correct and redo and go over it again. So I've kind of used that as my alter ego. One of the oldest leagues I play in, we all came up with GM alter egos. And so in addition to having my wrestling name, my GM alter ego is Robald McBang Jr. So I use that one as well.
That's kind of a horrible story. Like, I hurt for you for that having happened.
It probably made it at least an extra 20 minutes. Well, maybe 20 minutes to half an hour. It wasn't terrible, but just the fact that every single time it was like that, I had to change it. So
somebody obviously was just control V-ing through the entire thing, not paying the slightest semblance of attention to what they were actually doing.
No, not at all.
So, what about you, Nate? What's your wrestling name?
That is TBD. I don't know. I haven't come up with anything good yet. I swear to God, we were talking like just a week or two ago, and we came up with something really good for me, and now I can't think of what it might be. But
you could be like a mountain man called the Dakotan, maybe. How about that?
The Dakotan.
Yeah. Like wear like fur boots, like a fur coat.
You could ride a bear into the ring.
You have like a battle axe.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I like it.
A jug of whiskey with XXX on the side.
And then you play the whiskey jug at some point. Like if you win, you grab it out and you blow in it. Do the hoo, 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 like you're playing the jug.
While the defeated party is being fed alive to my bear.
To the bear, yeah. Actually, this sounds pretty accurate for professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Nice. I can dig it.
Cool.
All right. Well, on today's show, we'll talk Major League Wrestling. That's not even a thing. Major League Wrestling.
MLW.
Jello Wrestling, though. Did you guys Jello Wrestle over
We did.
When we were
Ron won, unfortunately.
Yeah, won.
He got the... You got the slip on me. You know, I've got a really high center of gravity, and that Jello, it's too hard to stand in.
I used the figure four leg lock, and he tapped out. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I can't blame you on that one. Actually, on today's show, first and foremost, I guess I should get some plugs out of the way. Listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. We just did episode 2 of that. And you can now find that on Google Play and iTunes. So if you are like me, if you're in the same boat where you don't really want to stream all day on like radio type of things because you have a limited amount of data and a even more limited amount of money, you can download them on the Wi-Fi or whatever in podcast form. You can just subscribe to the Fantrax radio feed. You can look it up there and get not just us, but like a whole slew of other podcasts. I've been listening to some football podcasts as well as I'm kind of kicking into that gear now. I'm starting to look at my keepers in all my leagues and crying because they all suck. It's going to be a long year. But yeah, so we got that going on. Of course, check out our work at Fantastics Insider Baseball for Ron and myself. And Van does ridiculous things over at Butu Inc. You gotta check out the Around the Horns.
Yeah, I had a new one. I'm gonna try and do that every week. I mean, what I should say is I'm trying to get these quotes from players every week. Sometimes it's hard to get a hold of them, but that's basically what it is. It's actual, factual, real quotes from baseball players.
It is, and it's fascinating the things that come out of their mouths. You would never have guessed it. And if you like that, or if you like the show, you can hit us up if you have anything to say to us at NastyCastBGFS on Twitter. I am at Nathan Dockin. I am Nathan. I didn't even introduce myself. You're typing, screw me up. Oh my God, the people had no idea who I was for the first like 3 minutes of the show.
It was panic and anarchy, sure.
Oh God.
You are the Dakotan.
The Dakotan. Also, I should switch that. I bet that's already taken on Twitter.
In true the Dakotan fashion, you earlier referred to it as the Wi-Fi. If you're on the Wi-Fi.
Is that wrong?
You could be there's an unnamed member of my family that happens to be an older person that calls it the Wi-Five. So the Wi-Five.
One quick thing to add to that. A friend of mine's mother refers to it as Nextflix.
That's beautiful.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you need Wi-Fi in order to enjoy the Nextflix. So
that's right. It's hand in hand.
It works well together.
Old people are funny. Van is, of course, on Twitter at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y. And please go to BigGuyFantasySports.com if you want to check out all of our written work. And you can also purchase the Bob Long's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide. And if you do that, be sure to use coupon code NASTYCAST, all one word, all caps, for $1 off of that bad boy.
Just scream right into the computer, NastyCast, all capitals.
Yeah. You got to have a microphone. Yeah. Just, you have to use the top of your voice. Just scream at your computer. Even if there's a sleeping baby around, doesn't matter.
And from what I understand from today, too, Bob Long is big in Japan as well.
Yeah.
So
he has quite the following, right. Yes.
Yes, yes.
Shipping overseas. Yeah, we got hard copies of that bad boy. That is sweet.
I don't have mine yet, but I'm excited. I'm ready for mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's glossy and thick, just like me. And also, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. If you like us, we will love you for a long, long time. And you can also get free dots and pretzels that way, just like screen capture what you did and prove that it was your doing, that you actually wrote the bugger. And we'll ship you some free dots and pretzels. Just get at us on Twitter. So with that, boys, let's get on to the news. That is going to, we're going to start off the show with Rafael Devers getting the call for Boston. And we just talked about this guy a little bit dynasty-wise on the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast / radio / whatever you want to call it. But for the redraft group, we're going to talk about that aspect of this van. So for the rest of the way, what do you think about Rafael Devers?
Well, I'm going to praise caution here, and there's a couple of reasons why. Number one,
raise him.
Well, number one, after stealing 21 bases in 2016, he has not stolen a single base this year at any level. So I don't think you're going to get any speed numbers. And in this day and age, you know, just a power guy doesn't hold the value that it used to. Now, he's also got a really good hit tool, so he's probably going to hit for a decent average, and he walks a lot, so he's going to get on base. But the luster and the shininess of Rafael Devers should be tempered a bit just because of the baseball climate we're in. I think he still has some value. But there's another reason to praise caution. It's that, of course, we'll talk about later, Eduardo Nunez was traded for, and I think he's a bit of a handcuff. So if Devers doesn't quite, you know, I won't say mash, but hit really well out of the gate, I think the Red Sox, who are in, you know, right in the middle of a playoff hunt, will be more inclined to lean on Eduardo Nunez at third base and not really put a lot of stress on Devers. He's been hitting, what, seventh, eighth, ninth, the couple games he's played, so he's not going to have a really cushy spot in the lineup. But this is a really good talent. So I think for career, he's obviously going to be, but he's going to be really good. But for this season, I'm just going to preach a lot of caution. You may not get exactly what you think you're going to get out of him.
Yeah,
redraft. Preach caution in there. Sorry, I was just just commenting on the weird phrase turning the van was doing.
What did I say?
Twice you said you're going to praise caution.
Did I?
And then the third time you said you're going to preach caution. Which I believe is the actual phrase.
I'm all messed up on Capri Sun, man. I can't be held to high standards.
Fair enough. Sorry to interrupt you, Rod. I just had to.
No, I'm at hallelujah caution here. He, like we talked about in the Dynasty podcast, you know, you got to look at him in a couple different lights here. And he's only 20. They did get Eduardo Nunez. And the one league that I actually had room for him in, which that's another thing that I think is he's better suited if you have a bigger bench or it's a deeper league, if you can get him there in the redraft format. But I had him, I actually added him a couple weeks ago when the rumblings kind of started of them, you know, doing something with Pablo Sandoval and maybe getting something at third base or calling him up. But I ended up dropping him for Yoan Moncada, who was available in the redraft. It's actually the Couch Tomatoes league that our own Mike Neese at BGFS runs. And so I ended up dropping Devers and adding Moncada. And the reason I did that was because I think he's got a clearer path to playing time. He's also, kind of like Van alluded to, Devers is not, at least the way it looks right now, going to get you a whole lot of stolen bases. I look for, as we talked about last week, Moncada, that to be the main thing he offers up for you. And we kind of know how the stolen bases have kind of become a premium as well. You know, like Van, you just alluded to, the power bat only is not that big of a deal anymore because everybody is hitting 20 home runs now. So I think caution definitely. If you can afford to add him in a deeper league, though, I think the talent is there, and he is only 20, but he could still give you a few bombs here and there. And you know, like Nate, you said in the Fantrax podcast a little bit ago, we still got a few days till the deadline, and it's very possible they could still go get somebody else that could block some playing time there at third base. And like I said too, don't forget that Nunez plays all over the place. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So Devers could miss a few at bats, but maybe not as many as we think he might when we kind of see what the plan is that they have for Nunez that they got.
Yeah, I think that it's right to hallelujah caution. Straight to praise caution, and straight to preach it. Going to be sitting against lefties from the looks of it, and that makes for a little bit chintzier playing time. I don't know that, like, I play it, well, the Fart League, which somewhat long-time listeners know is an AL-only league that I started this year that is auction drafts locally. And I didn't even go to add him there just because even in that league, I have... I'm stacked at the corners. I don't need him. I don't have room for him because I need pitching for my daily roster moves. So I'm not over the moon for him for the rest of the season. If he hits a few home runs, then great. But yeah, I wouldn't honestly be too surprised if he gets sent back down now that they have Nunez. And again, maybe they add another piece. So I don't think that he's anywhere near a must add in 10, 12 team leagues, 15 team leagues. Sure. I think you could probably find room for him there. And most AL only leagues, this one isn't a particularly deep AL only league. I will say that. So, but that's enough about him. We've talked about him twice now. Let's move on to Clayton Kershaw. This is fun news. He's on the DL again, not 4 to 6 weeks with another back issue. So let's take a look at his value in redraft formats next year. Ron, are you still willing to draft Clayton Kershaw in the first round in 2018?
I think so. I mean, we had a lot of the talk about the back this year, and it ended up, you know, coming back to haunt him. But
I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you. when you look at what he's put up, I mean, he's already got 166 strikeouts, 141 innings. He's doing what Clayton Kershaw does. And so I think that he's still – is a first rounder. However, it kind of pushes him back a little bit. He is still only 29 to be 30 going into next year. And so I like him still. I mean, he still is Clayton Kershaw. He still is a dominant guy. He still is a future Hall of Famer, but I think maybe it might push him back a little bit. to maybe towards the end of the first round. I don't think if I'm, you know, if I'm in a 12-team draft, I don't think I would take it maybe before, I don't know, maybe about pick 7 or 8. It's hard to pass up on him, though, because when he is on, he's one of the most dominant, valuable players in fantasy, and I think he gets glossed over a lot in a lot of leagues for offensive players in that first round. But to me, he still is, but it might move him back a couple of slots just depending on where I'm drafting at.
I pretty much agree. I still think he's a first rounder because pitching, great pitching, is at a premium. And guess what? He's still great. When he pitches, he's elite. Even if we've seen, well, I don't have his numbers in front of me. I think his ERA is like 2.1 and people are disappointed. That's insane. He's still really good. And I think there's probably going to be an overabundance of caution here just because the Dodgers are so far up. So they're going to give him a little more time than maybe they would if he were, I don't know, right in the middle of a playoff hunt. They might bring him back a week or so earlier. But yeah, I could still see him going in the first round. I can't ever seem to pull the trigger and do it, but I get it if somebody does it. But definitely towards the back end now. I think a lot of people are talking about he could be a good pick even second, you know, behind Mike Trout. I don't know about that. I'd still take a couple of guys over him, even Altuve, people like that. So at the back end of the first round, though, he's a fine pick.
Yeah, I was thinking that I was going to say no to this, and I'm looking at some top Dynasty numbers here at the Dynasty Guru, just looking at their most recent top 500 that we talked about a few episodes ago. And I think he's still in the top 15 for me, right probably at the back end. They had Miguel Sano at 15, for example. I think I'm still taking him over Miguel Sano, and I definitely rather have him over like Xander Bogaerts. Which I guess he is already, but that's about it. We're probably looking at 14, 15 for me. But you're kind of just screwed as far as if you want to replace him this year. I don't know. Maybe you want to just get some sort of high K middle relievers, unless you need the quality starts. Or I mean, even the wins. I don't have a problem just drafting middle relievers if you guys need wins. I don't know how you guys feel about that specific strategy, because wins are such a crapshoot anyway.
To an extent.
Well, at this point, that's about all you're going to get that's going to replace anything he can do anyway, because you're definitely not going to get a starter that's going to be anywhere near what he's putting up. So, yeah, if you can get guys that, you know, that middle relief spot that are still available out there, maybe guys like if Davinsky's still out there or Archie Bradley's still out there, guys like that, they might be gone depending on the league format, but you might have to mix and match those guys to put those stats back up, because you're not going to get a starter that's going to do that.
Now, let me ask this too, is in your guys' opinions, is we always sit here, flags fly forever and all that, what kind of a thing would you do as far as trading Kershaw? Would you be willing to do it? Would you be willing to take a discount just so that way you can try and fight for this season? Or is he still, you know, the kind of elite player that even if he's hurt, I want to keep him for, you know, at least his career or the next couple of years?
No, you're talking Dynasty?
Yeah, I'd say Dynasty. Definitely Dynasty.
I wouldn't trade him in Dynasty. I still think, like I said, he is only 29, 30 years old. He's still got, I think, a few more years. Yeah, the bat could be an issue, but I still think with what you're going to get from him when he is healthy, very few guys that you're going to be able to get are going to put that up. So I think in Dynasty, I'd still hold on to him. Now, redraft, yeah, I'd try to see if you could get something. I don't think anybody's going to give you anything at this point in the season, though, because, what, he's out 4 to 6 weeks, and so when we get to that time frame, you know, redraft, I guess he's not going to be helpful at all, so I guess I need to think about that again. But yeah, Dynasty, I'd still hang on to him. I still think you've got at least 3 more years of elite level stuff.
He could be a drop in redraft leagues,
right? I had to rethink the time frame there for a second.
Yeah, you're probably looking at 2-3 starts max, I think,
and those will be just warm-up starts, basically getting prepared for the postseason too.
Pretty much, yeah. That's all they want him for. They won like their last 75 games in a row or something like that. Yep. And it's not like the Dodgers are really losing anything with having him out for a stretch at this point. They can just tread water and be just fine, just kind of coast to the finish line, get him back and rock. So yeah, that's what I would do. I just try to look up, depending on what your need, I would just try to stabilize my ratios and get some Ks from some middle relievers, and I don't know, just churn some of those guys, stream if you can. But otherwise, yeah, you're kind of toast. And as far as Dynasty, I agree with Ron. It's going to be hard for me to trade him, even if it's, I mean, really with, God, we, how many weeks do we have left? You know, how much impact is anything else going to really make over whatever waiver wire fill-in you can get for Kershaw? I'm not sure it would be worth it. It would have to be probably an overpay, even with Kershaw on the DL, to make it worthwhile, I would think. But moving on, we're going to talk about some St. Louis Cardinals. Van Dexter Fowler has hit the DL again. Any interest in Harrison Bader, who we just got called up?
I just wrote down. Up.
I speak English.
He been praised right up. Yep. I just wrote, meh, sure. And that's kind of how I feel about this. He has some pop. He can run a little bit. He's got potential to hit for some average. But I certainly don't see his line being anything like it is at AAA. He's hitting 297, 354, 517. I don't think that's going to happen here in St. Louis. But he could provide some value. He's probably, I mentioned this on the other podcast. He's too young to be successful for the Cardinals because these players that they bring up and are successful with, particularly outfielders, are always like 26, 28. So being 23 years old, I think, is going to hamper him a bit in the weird grand scale of the way Cardinals do things. But if you're desperate for, you know, a couple of at bats here and there to maybe try and, I don't know, push your stats up a bit, sure, give it a whirl. But I'm not going to hold my breath that he's, you know, elite or going to save this team or anything like that.
The only place I looked at him is in my 19-team league, and he was already taken because he actually was not on someone's 15-man minors roster. So the thing about the Cardinals, too, is they have an abundance of outfielders, whether it be at the major league level or at the minor league level. You know, Tyler O'Neill is a guy that we talked about in the other podcast that's there in the minor league level as well at AAA. And so they're going to have to make a move, I guess they don't have to make a move, but they could probably get a couple of nice pieces back if they wanted to move guys like Magnura Sierra. Tommy Pham is up there. I don't think he's going anywhere. Piscotty is still a guy that's hanging around. So they could move Bader or O'Neill and get a nice piece back. But, you know, beyond that 19-teamer, I didn't look to add him anywhere because I don't know if he's going to be any better than possibly a fourth outfielder, at least what they have right now. He doesn't walk enough. He strikes out a little too much for me, and he's not really good at any one thing. He's just kind of good at a lot of things, which isn't all bad in a deeper league. But if it's anything beyond, 12 teams, I'd consider it. But anything 12 or under, no thanks. I'm going to pass.
Totally agree. Yeah, pretty much fourth, fifth outfielder in a 15-team league is about all I expect from him. A little bit of power, and that's about it. And he'll probably be back down whenever Dexter Fowler is healthy again. And there was something else I was going to say, and I've completely forgotten it now. So let's keep talking about the Cardinals. But on the pitching side, we've got Adam Wainwright, Ron, who has hit the disabled list in his old age. And we've got Luke Weaver, who is going to take his spot in the rotation. And I'm going to look up his upcoming matchups here, filling in for Wainwright's slot. He's going to be at home against Arizona, at Milwaukee, and at Kansas City, which is not the cakewalk that it used to be earlier on in the season. Yeah, weird. All of a sudden, they're just on fire over the last month, and they're winning every game. So with that in mind, do you still have any interest in Luke Weaver?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Luke Weaver, and it's kind of the same thing. Not as deeper formats, but if you need a pitcher, you know, like we talked about with Kershaw, he's not going to give you Kershaw numbers, but he's a guy that you could look at that could be available in your league that could potentially replace some of what he's going to do. I like the K per nine. It's over 10 in AAA. Strain rate is right at 80%. I was like, for a guy, you know, if they have a tendency to get into jams, I like to look at that strain rate and see if they're letting those guys score or they're getting off the base paths. Kind of like Van alluded to earlier, the XFIP doesn't like him so much. The FIP isn't as bad, but he's a guy overall that I like, that I'd like to add in a couple of places because of injuries. And you know, like I said, if you need that Kershaw replacement, obviously not on the same level, but could replace a little bit of that. But yeah, those first three starts are kind of brutal. So you might add with caution and maybe just kind of throw him on your bench and see what he does as far as going through those lineups, because those lineups are not so much. Well, Kansas City has kind of heated up, but I'm not too confident in him going against the Diamondbacks or at Miller Park as well. So add him, put him on your bench, and just kind of see how he performs and go from there.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked about him on the other podcasts at a little bit of length. And to sum that up, it's that he's really changed his draft stock. When he was picked, he was a college level arm, and this is the 2014 draft. He was a college level arm that they figured they could get to the majors quickly and had a low floor, you know, low ceiling type pedigree. But he's really turned it around, and he's been striking out more batters than was ever guessed. And the walk rate is elite. Like, he has really good command. So I actually am pretty high on Luke Weaver. I used to like him. Now I really like him. I think in a redraft league, exactly what Ron said makes sense. Pick him up. If you desperately need him, go ahead and put him in your lineup. But if you don't, put him on your bench. See what you can get these first couple of starts. Because if he performs really well against these, you know, kind of mediocre matchups for him, then who's to say what he can do against really bad teams? So I like him a lot. I think there's a lot of value here. I called him kind of similar to Aaron Nola, and I still agree with that sentiment. I think that's kind of what we're looking at here, because Nola did the same thing. He was a college-level arm who struck out more than we would have guessed, who also had good control. Similar guy, so I think he can get similar kind of outputs, although Weaver's certainly been a lot healthier in his career, so maybe you even get better results right off the bat.
So do you like him, or do you like him?
I like him. Like, I would send a paper to him and it said, check yes or no. Like, will you be on my fantasy team? It would be yes, definitely.
So you're saying he's a dream Weaver.
Oh, indeed. I feel like, by the way, you know, when Jared Weaver came up, Jeff Weaver was really on his way out. So, like, he stole the essence of Jeff Weaver. And then... when Luke Weaver's coming up, yeah, Jared Weaver kind of fell off. So I think there can only be one Weaver. There's like a balance in the force here.
That's actually my favorite brand of cologne, is Essence of Jeff Weaver also. It's a pretty good one. So
I'll bet that stinks so bad. It smells like mullet, because that's what every Weaver has except Luke so far.
It's actually just hair gel. Oh, man. I like Luke Weaver a lot, too. Yeah, we went over this on the Fantrax podcast, and big fan. The matchups definitely suck. 15-team leagues, I'm picking him up and benching him. 10, 12-team leagues, I might just leave him on the bench and let somebody else stream him. I have a feeling that those matchups might not be too kind for him. So we'll see there, but the bar is so high for pitching in those leagues. You know, you're talking about, oh, man, even in a 13-team league like BGFS, it's 13 teams, and still pitching is just so plentiful. I don't play in too many of those shallow leagues, so it's just kind of a different world for me. But like, even just picking up Trevor Cahill off the wire at this point, who's been really good when he's healthy, you know, he's just like nothing. Just go pick him up. Nobody really cares. So I think that his value is pretty limited there. But otherwise, I love him, and in dynasty leagues too, I like him a lot. So with that, I'm going to go weave some of my own dreams, and we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about some of the trades that have occurred over the past week.
Nasty. You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
All right, welcome back to the nastiest of casts. I am Nathan Dockin. I am joined by the Pacific Cooler and the Wicked Dolphin right here. We're going to talk some baseball. Welcome to Tradesville, week two. We're going to start off with a crappy trade for next to nothing. That we're going to go to Van on this one. David Phelps went to Seattle for a bunch of minor leaguers, and we might as well just talk about A.G. Ramos and the possibility of him leaving as well, a probability perhaps, as it were. So do you see any changes shaking out there in the Seattle bullpen and in the Miami Dolphins bullpen?
Well, first and foremost, before I get into that, I didn't mention this last week, and that's my own fault, but you had a segment called Welcome to Ouchville, and that sounds like something like would be on Doug, the old Nickelodeon show, like, oh man, welcome to Ouchville. I'm going to give you a bruise. And so I love these Welcome to Blankville segments. They're the best.
It's a good show. Patty Mayonnaise.
Patty Mayonnaise would say it. Yeah. Roger Klotz. Skeeter. I know that
Skeeter,
show.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's blue. And Mr. Dink. Oh, man, I'm making myself laugh. No, not much is going to change here for either of these teams. Phelps is kind of performing above his means, so I think he's just more or less going to be a reliever they just randomly use. The minor leaguers that Miami got for Phelps really aren't that exciting. Brian Hernandez, Brandon Miller, Pablo Lopez, Lucas Schiraldi. not a whole lot to look for here. Hernandez is the big piece, but there's, again, just not too much involved. Maybe he steals a little bit. Maybe he has a decent hit tool, but it's probably going to be a little while before he shows up. I think Phelps is going to help Seattle. It's a decent trade for them, and it's a decent trade for Miami because they got some, you know, roll of the dice players that they can see what they have out of it. But not a whole lot is going to go down because of it. AJ Ramos is almost certain to be traded. So that's definitely a situation to keep an eye on because you're definitely going to want to have the handcuff, which we'll discuss later, I'm sure. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's trade season. Stuff like this happens and it's worth talking about to an extent. But don't get too excited about the prospects that were moved in this one.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the prospects, we talked about them on the other podcast, and I'll kind of save that, but they're really not, to me, to appear to be worth a whole lot. I see David Phelps kind of just slotting in the middle. I don't necessarily think that he's gonna be a guy that you're gonna want to target in a whole lot of formats. And AJ Ramos is just a matter of when he's gonna get moved, and we'll kind of allude to later on who might be the next guy to step up in that bullpen. Right. I did want to real quick though, because I always come with the important facts here. There is a team that is doing. It's funny you say the Doug thing because there's a team. I think I don't know who it is. I have to look it up again. But they're doing a what was the superhero that Doug used to play? Quail Man.
Quail Man. Oh yeah.
There is a team doing a Quail Man bobblehead.
No way.
Yeah, I just saw that today. So it's funny you bring up the Doug reference, and I'm trying to find what team it is, but. Overall, pretty solid looking.
Brooklyn Cyclones, there, so. Apparently.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, they're the ones that. Yeah, I've given them a shout out before for their Seinfeld theme bobbleheads as well. So yeah,
that's a team to follow cool. If you're interested in the weird bobbleheads. I like it. Yes, sir. I'd love to have a yeah. Quail Man bobblehead.
Pretty awesome. I'm trying to find a picture of it.
There's also one of the other Doug characters was like a, I don't know, he was a detective or something, but it was Jack Bandit. And so the little song he would go, he'd go, "Wanana, Jack Bandit." And I do that almost every single time to "Wanana, Jet Bandy." And no one gets the joke because no one remembers Excellent. That but my dumb head.
Oh, sometimes that's the best, though. But let's just talk about that bullpen now since we're on the subject. We actually had Kyle Berkeley hitting the disabled list. So, do you guys have any interest in Junichi Tozawa?
I guess. I mean, if you want to try and get a vulture save here and there, but I think Bearclaw comes back and is fine, and he's the guy. That's definitely the guy to own, at least for the rest of the season, and potentially next year, unless Miami, you know, buys a closer. But I guess if you're really desperate and you think that maybe two or three you might be able to get out of him, would help if, you know, the timing works out. But other than that, no, not really. I think it's Bearclaw's job once he's healthy.
Yeah, and if certain memory serves me right, didn't Tozawa close for the Red Sox a few years ago and he recorded a few saves? But it seems like memory serves me right as well. He's injury prone. Mm-hmm. He gets hurt a lot. And I think yeah. He's an older pitcher too. I want to say he's almost 40. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you want to get two or three saves here and there. But yeah, Kyle Bearclaw is the guy to own in that bullpen.
Shoulder impingement. That does not sound good, though. I guess I haven't looked up. I just recently found out that he was actually on the DL. That just came down.
I found out when you said 3 seconds ago that Kyle Bearclaw was on the DL.
I think it was just today that he was put on there, so it is relatively new.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, that doesn't sound good, shoulder impingement. That might be a lengthy absence.
Said he's been dealing with it periodically, but not to a significant degree. It appeared worsened on Monday when he pitched a scoreless inning, but his velocity was down. So I guess this was just let's go ahead and put him on there since we've actually seen a velocity difference. He's going to go for an MRI tomorrow, so we'll know more.
Okay. Frightening. When did that happen? Junichi Tozawa not having the best season. Perhaps Nick Whitgren would be of interest. He at least has better strikeout to walk rates, strikeout per inning, and 2.38 walks per nine, even with a 4.10 ERA. But not a lot of interesting options there in Miami for sure. You're looking at pretty much bottom of the barrel saves at this point, which is getting to be more and more common with some other teams. And speaking of which, actually, we're going to touch on the Padres bullpen. We might as well do that now, sort of wrap that into our analysis of this deal. So let's start off with Trevor Cahill, because he was, I guess, maybe the biggest part of this deal. The Padres sent him along with Brandon Maurer, Ryan Buchter, well, just those three. There's no and to that. To the Royals, who are suddenly hot and contending, in exchange for Matt Strom, Travis Wood, Yasturi Ruiz, and Cold Hard Cash, which is always the best part. Yeah. So, Trevor Cahill, Ron, value up, down, or the same?
I think it's, I mean, maybe down a little bit just because he's leaving Petco Park, but I think this is one of those sneaky kind of deals that, you know, KC all of a sudden, like we alluded to earlier, is playing really well, and they think they might have a shot at it before a lot of their key free, you know, the core group of those guys that were on that World Series team hit the free agent market. And so they're making one last run at it. And I think this is a nice, cheap add. You know, these are the kind of deals that, you know, when you look back on some of these teams that make runs, these are the ones that make the difference. And so they've added two nice bullpen pieces. And, you know, we talked about before possibly them sending Kelvin Herrera out to a team that might need him. And so that gives them Soria, that gives them Maurer that they can put in the closer role if they do end up getting rid of him. So I think it's a nice deal for them. They didn't really give up much. If you look at, you know, like the numbers there a little bit, I mean, Ruiz might pan out to be a nice deep sleeper, but overall, he's still a ways away. He's more of a speed prospect than anything. He is having a nice season, though, but he's pretty far down the ladder. So overall, I think Kansas City really pulled off a nice little trade here and gave up some guys that are struggling a little bit and got some really quality pieces in return. So you might see a little bump in Cahill's numbers. I don't have his home road splits in front of me, so I don't know exactly how he pitched, you know, at Petco, but I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that he was a little bit better there. But I think overall it's a move that makes sense for them, and it's a move I think that will benefit them and could add to what they already have going and maybe make a nice little run here towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a good deal for the Royals, but I also don't think they're that very good of a team, so I don't necessarily know if this really propels them into a really good position, but it does help the team. I think that's – you can't really deny that. As far as moving stadiums – you know, Kansas City is a pretty tough place to hit. It's a big park, too, so I don't think the park factor is really going to affect him a whole lot. Cahill, I'm not really that interested in anyway. The strikeouts are nice, but the walks aren't, and he's only made 11 starts this year because he's been hurt, so who knows if he even stays healthy the rest of the season. I think if you have Cahill, you're going to shuttle him out there, but I wouldn't be worrying about making a trade or targeting him just because I think the risk is too heavy. But like you said, Ron, Esturi Ruiz could be a good piece down the road, but who knows? Matt Strom has a lot of question marks surrounding him. So the Padres didn't really get much in return, but they did get a couple of gamble pieces. So it'll work out fine for them. I mean, they weren't going anywhere, and they probably weren't going to get much more than this. So it was fine either way for both teams.
You mentioned, Ron, some potential splits, and you hit the nail on the head. In 25 innings at home, he has a 0.72 ERA. In 36 innings on the road, he has a 5.75 ERA. So I am trepidatious of this move to the American League, to a different park, even though it is, as far as ballparks go in the American League, it is pretty pitcher-friendly. Spacious Kauffman with their rolling waterfalls and whatnot. So I will still say value down, but let's talk about some of these relief pieces. What the hell is going on, Van, in the Padres bullpen now? Who are you looking for saves there with Maurer and Buchter gone?
Well, it's Brad Hand right now. However, he's also likely gone, so I think you have to look a little deeper. Kirby Yates, Phil Maton, or Maton, however you pronounce it, and Carter Capps are probably your big three as far as getting saves. I don't know about Carter Capps because I don't know what they're going to do about that delivery or his health. So I think it might be Kirby Yates for a bit. Either way, I think Capps is the only guy on this list who could provide positive pitching value if he pitches. But there are other question marks. Yates, I'm not that excited in. Maton, I'm not that excited in. So this is going to be if you're super desperate for saves, you might try and play around here. But other than that, I'm going to try and hopefully avoid this, because I really don't think Brad Hand stays in that team for much longer. Brad Hand of the game.
Yeah, I got to say Yates is probably the guy, although Capps is the only really, to me, known commodity out of those three, and I think he might be the guy they look to, but I'm not excited about any of them. I'm probably going to avoid it altogether. I do have Brad Hand, I think, in one league, so I might capitalize there for a couple days, and then if he gets dealt, you know, just kind of send him, see where he goes and see what the role is, and maybe send him back the waivers. But I'm not overly optimistic about anybody they have there.
I've been stashing Carter Capps in places where I can, and we saw how ridiculous he can be when he's healthy. He's definitely had some struggles in his rehab. Who would have possibly thought that with the most ridiculous delivery in baseball that he would have problems coming back from Taijuan? But he seems to be working his way up pretty well. I looked at his stats earlier, and they were really good over the last couple games since he's returned from a secondary stint on the disabled list. So I would be hedging my bets with him just because you could get elite ratios with him. Otherwise, yeah, it's probably a toss-up between... I mean, by the time if you pick up Hand, he might have been dealt by the time this podcast is released. We don't know.
Yeah, so, yeah, between knows?
Yeah, and between Maton and Kirby, it's tough to say which way they'll lean there. Kirby Yates has a cool name, so I would hope for him, but I really don't have any extra read on that situation, to be perfectly honest. So let's you guys don't see Mauer overtaking Covey and Herrera. You don't see any problems in the near future there with Kansas City?
I don't, and I think if the Royals are making moves like this to try and stay in contention, I think they probably hold on to Herrera just to try and make a run with that, which is probably the wrong move because, again, I don't know if they even make it to the playoffs. But, no, Mauer doesn't really strike me as the guy to take over from Herrera. For a number of reasons. One, Herrera is a better pitcher. And number two, they want to keep that value on Herrera to get the best trade they could if they do decide to move him or get an opportunity to move him.
Very good. All right. Jaime Garcia to the Twins. Woohoo! Does it change his value? Does it give him any value, Ron?
No, to me, it really doesn't change it. I don't have him in a lot of places anyway. Not really a guy that I'm big on. You know, kind of like we alluded to in the other podcast, I think it's good for them to get rid of him and they can actually still get something for him while he's healthy, because we know that's kind of been his downfall is the injury bug. So they were able to get something for him and send him off to Minnesota. I don't know. Is that a indication that Minnesota is in it to win it?
It's the way to hedge their bets so that, like, they're honestly in a really tough spot. Because if you think about it, they're right on the cusp. They're one of the few. Yeah. Well, they're below 500 now, but really they're one of the very few teams that are actually in contention. But their team is really not great. Like, their bullpen sucks. The back end of their rotation sucks. If you just look at run differential, they should have a much worse record. So really, everybody doesn't have any. Nobody, I should say, has any illusions of grandeur. Like, nobody's going, oh, these guys can take it all. You know, they're pretty much. But it, you know. At the same time, if they just start selling pieces, like, it would be nice if they could sell Ervin Santana and get some really nice prospects for him, which I think they could. But at the same time, you can't be like in the thick of things and not expect some sort of backlash when you trade away one of your better pieces in the midst of what could potentially be a run, you know, and all of a sudden you're selling, and then what kind of message does that send your players and all that kind of stuff. So this is sort of the perfect hedge move for them. It's like, hey, we're trying, you know, we're giving it the old gung-ho. When really it's kind of like it's freaking Jaime Garcia, you know. But they've had such garbage at the back end of that rotation that, you know, they can afford to take on a salary. And hopefully it's a bit of a tourniquet at least, you know. This is so, as far as my opinion of his value, it's still zero. In fantasy, though, I'm not interested at all.
You know, absolutely everything you just said about the Twins can be applied to the Angels as well.
So what are your feelings about them as long as we're on them?
Well, they need to do some stuff. It's the exact same thing. Again, you kind of want to hedge your bets, but you also don't want to completely blow it up. So they have some pieces they could get some prospects for, which is probably the right move. But as we know with baseball, all you have to do is get into the playoffs and then the hot team wins. So either the Twins or the Angels, if they find their way in the playoffs, who knows what could happen. So, I mean, it's kind of a weird position to be in. And I think this is a fine move for the Twins, particularly because they're not paying Garcia anything. Basically, Atlanta's picking up every dollar of that contract. So that's a really good deal for them. Yeah. Well, maybe it's not every dollar, but it's a huge chunk of it. So that's kind of a big deal. And then I'll let Ron go ahead and tell you about the prospect that the Braves got for it.
Yeah, so I'm a fan of the prospect that was sent back in return because of his name. I believe it's pronounced Oscar, but it looks like Hua Scar, like we talked about with the Pacino reference there. Enoa. Hua Scar. Enoa. And so decent prospect. Mid-90s fastball, guy that's still a little bit raw, but pretty far away from the show, only 19 years old. But like we alluded to as well, anything you can get for Jaime Garcia is gonna be a win for you. And with what we talked about real quick, and I won't go too in-depth in it, with the Atlanta farm system, you know, like I said before, I seem to write about them in the on-deck circle every week, this week included, because I put Lucas Sims in there, is they're stocked. We know that. They've got top prospects, especially starting pitching. So he's a guy that they can groom, and he's probably still 3-4 years away from the show if he makes it that far. And they can afford to maybe take a little longer with him, put him in a relief role. But overall, not a bad prospect, not a bad guy to take a flyer on. His brother, Michael, was a top prospect that ended up not quite panning out as a starter, had some success as a mid-reliever. And he's still got some time to develop some of his secondary pitches. But overall, not a bad guy to get in return, especially for somebody that, you know, is just kind of a fill-in piece for the Braves until you can call up some of your top arms there. So overall, not a bad guy to get, but like I said, still pretty far away, only 19 years old, so we'll see.
It's also worth pointing out, actually no it isn't, but it's worth saying that Anthony Recker was also involved in the deal. He's going to go to the Twins, so hooray.
Oh, yeah, Anthony freaking Recker. Yeah. Home Recker, that's what his name should be.
Sign them stunningly up, handsome.
Yeah. Oh, God, don't get me started on catchers. We should have Aaron Hicks. Anyway, Anthony Swarzak to Milwaukee for Ryan Cordell. So this is unfortunate. I was actually, I guess I forgot to plug, and maybe it doesn't even matter now, but I was on Fantasy Sports Radio with Al Melchior earlier this week, and we talked about Anthony Swarzak, and I said how he's going to be the closer, and I wouldn't invest much in Tyler Clippard, and then that very day, he got one save and then was immediately traded for Ryan Cordell. So now that entire point was moot. Who's closing in Chicago now? I forget who we're on.
I'll go ahead and go. Does that mean, though, that you were 100% correct because he was 1-for-1 in save chances for the Sox?
Yeah, I was right, man. He proved me right.
See, there you go. So that's not all bad. When we look at the Sox, you know, a guy that I think is a sleeper that some people have forgotten about too, because he had a nice season a couple seasons ago. It just activated from the DL today, actually, and that's Jake Patryka. He's a guy that I had in a deeper league that, you know, with Clippard in there, he's not looked so good in the closing role, and plus there's speculation that he could even be flipped somewhere else as well. So Jake Patryka is the guy that I'm going to try to get in a couple places where I need saves. As far as Ryan Cordell, he slots in, you know, in that already stacked White Sox farm system, and I can't remember exactly what number he's at, but he's got a lot of guys to go as far as trying to make his way up the ladder. But he could be a decent piece, kind of like we talked about in the other podcast, maybe kind of a fourth outfielder, a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed, does a lot of things okay, but nothing real, not one thing really stands out. So he's not somebody that I'm going to rush out to add in really any format, but Jake Patryka is the guy definitely in the bullpen that I'm going to look at to add.
Yeah, it's an interesting bullpen. Clippard obviously is not going to hold the job. He's just not very good anymore. Patryka has the secondary stats in his favor. He's got 11 K per nine, 2.5 walks per nine, but he's also sitting on an almost 10 ERA. FIP thinks he's 5.21, and plus he's been hurt quite a bit. So I don't know if they're willing to give him that job, but he's definitely, well, I won't say definitely, but he's probably one of the better pitchers for it. Dan Jennings might be in lines for saves, and they also just recently signed Danny Farquhar, who is DFA'd. Who knows? Maybe they try and give him a shot just because of the experience. It's another one of those situations, kind of like the Padres bullpen, where I'm not really that excited about it, and I really wouldn't mess with it unless I'm uber desperate for saves.
Yeah, I think I've pretty much just settled upon Clippard being the only potential guy who I'm even worried about rostering right now. I don't know about any of these other guys if I'm really going to spend much on them. It's sort of weird with Clippard. Like, I'm not sure exactly what has led to all of these walks. 5.202 walks per nine this year, way above anything that he's really done for a long time. And so I wonder if it's just not some kind of mechanical tweak that he needs to get back in line, which I don't know if he's capable of doing that before he just destroys your ratios. So that's why I still don't have a ton of interest in him. But it's weird because his swing strike rate way up, contact in the zone and overall is just way down. But he's also been out of the zone way, way more. He's only got a 40.5% zone rate, which is the lowest of his career, pretty wide margin. If he can get himself lined back, effective down the stretch, but my confidence in that happening is pretty low.
He's a prime example of a guy who he's the prime example of the volatility of relief pitchers. Because do you guys remember when he was really good? He was a setup guy in Washington and was elite. And I thought could be a closer anywhere and be really good. And then now it's just, I don't know, it's not pretty. He just had a couple of rough years, and particularly this year, and it's just not that exciting anymore.
Nope. Only 32, so we might see him kicking around for a while. We'll see. And then our last trade to report here in Tradesville, Eduardo Nunez went to Boston, and I guess we kind of talked about this already, but I don't know. I guess I would say value down probably just because I'm not sure if the playing time is going to be there for him now. Do you guys disagree with that at all?
Not necessarily, but I think one thing that also kind of scares me is the Red Sox don't run as much. So I don't know if he'll be given the green light to steal quite as much as he had. And that's where most of his value comes from. So playing time could be interesting if Rafael Devers becomes what he potentially could be and they give him more starts than they think. And then also the stolen bases being down. So I don't know. Value down a little bit, but he's still going to be on a playoff team. So they're going to be in the thick of things and playing. So he's going to get some playing time. So he still has value.
And I think if you look at all the positions he's played. He's played second, he's played third, he's played short, he's played outfield. So he can play a lot of different spots, and I think when you piece together, possibly, it'd be interesting to see what they do with him and where they try to play him, if they do try to exclusively play him at one spot or try to use him kind of as a super utility guy. I think he can piece together enough at-bats for him to be useful still in fantasy. But yeah, it's a good point as far as the steals, because that's one of the reasons that you drafted Eduardo Nunez. But he is hitting really well. I think when last check he's hitting .308. He's kind of brought it around a little bit lately. But it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds with Devers up, with Nunez being added, and to see if they do anything else offensively before the deadline, because that could impact where they put Nunez as well if they get someone at another position. So I still like him. I still think he is useful, and I still think he can string together enough at-bats every week where he can be useful in just about every format.
Right on. All right, we got one bullpen that we haven't discussed yet that we're going to bring up right now that we seem to have got a little bit of clarity on, and that is the Texas Rangers. So, Ron, what's your opinion on the Rangers bullpen right now? Who's the guy to own there?
Our boy, the Texas Croissant, is getting some love for these saves. He's recorded a couple saves, look pretty good. Keon Kalis still creeping, so he's a guy that could maybe wrestle that job away. I don't know, like we've talked about, if there's anybody else really in that bullpen I want to own, but it seems like the thing I like about Leclerc is that it seems like the walks are starting to kind of trend down a little bit. I'd like to see them go down a little bit further. But overall, I'm hoping they'll put him in that role and just kind of see what he can do, and if he can consistently get the save chances, I think he can capitalize on it. But it just, like I said, you know, you got to see what they decide to do with Keon Kalis still hanging around. But overall, I think Leclerc is still the guy. He's the guy that I think we've kind of talked about is kind of the favorite for at least Van and I know have said that. So he's still the guy that I'm owning there.
Yeah, the situation isn't very fluid. That's still the scary part with it, because the first save Leclerc got, it was because Claudio was just getting the night off. And then, I don't know, it's weird. I don't think Claudio should have the job, and I think the Rangers know that. So I think they'll give it to Leclerc. And until Kayla starts pitching back-to-back games, I don't think they'll really consider him either. So maybe that happens soon, but I don't know. I think Leclerc could finish the season out as the closer, but I could also see them switching to Kayla. So it's still just a weird situation and something worth monitoring.
Oh, interesting. Well, we've got some discourse here because I've actually got Alex Claudio as my favorite for the rest of the way. Leclerc, when he did come in and get that save, it was, like you said, Van, with Claudio pretty much unavailable because he tossed like three and a third innings over the last two games or whatever. And he seems to be closing out games fairly frequently now. He's got wins or saves in four of the last five games that he's pitched. And it's unfortunate if that is the case as far as fantasy purposes go, just because his K per nine sucks. Like he's a 5.71 is where it lands right now. He's a sinker ball control guy, a 71% ground ball rate, which is obviously very, very elite and just doesn't walk anybody. So it's not the ideal profile for a closer. It's not that power reliever that just strikes everybody out. You get ground ball guys and you tend to get blown up a little bit more than you'd like because you're sort of at the whims of BABIP. But I think that's – I actually picked him up in the BGFS Dynasty Classic, and that's who I'm rolling with for now, even though it's not a great fantasy profile, and despite him being a lefty as well. It seems like, as far as I'm concerned, I think he's got the job. But let's close off the show with our – there's going to be a lot more moves. This is going to be a similar format, I think, next week as we wrap up the trade deadline. So who are our top three handcuffs in preparation of closer trades? So, Van, let's start with you. Who are you handcuffing right now?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give a couple of names here. First off, Santiago Casilla somehow is still the closer in Oakland, which also means that he probably somehow has some trade value. If he gets moved, they've shown that Blake Treinen, they're putting him in some big spots. I think he could get the job. And to be honest, just about anybody can succeed as a closer in either Oakland or San Diego. So I think Treinen could be a guy to look at. It's kind of a deep name. You're probably not hearing bandied about quite as much. And then in Detroit, Justin Wilson is likely to be on the move, and Bruce Rondon might actually get the opportunity. It's been 10 years since we ever thought he was going to be a closer, but he's still got that 100-mile-an-hour fastball. He hasn't been a psycho like he has in the past, so the team might actually like him and might plug him in there. So that's a guy to get and kind of handcuff yourself with.
He stinks.
Well, and then we mentioned Kyle Barraclough, so I won't go on him. But the other name I want to mention is Bud Norris. He blew a save in spectacular fashion the other day, giving up a grand slam to E5. So I think if he kind of struggles a bit more, Cam Bedrosian might finally get that job back. But I don't know. I still think Norris is still a pretty good pitcher in relief. So maybe that doesn't happen, but it's definitely a situation to watch.
Let's see here. So I had Kyle Barraclough as well, and I have, in addition to him, Tozawa, just in case. Not really a huge fan of Tozawa, but, you know, like we talked about, Kyle Barraclough just went on the DL, so, and it's kind of an afterthought that Ramos is going to get moved somewhere. I also have Soria again, and the reason I went with him, you know, we talked about what the Royals are doing, and they might not want to deal Kelvin Herrera, deal any of those guys in the bullpen, but when we look at the returns that some of these teams are getting for either mid relievers or guys that have save experience, they're getting some pretty decent packages of prospects for them. So it's not out of the ordinary that Soria could be dealt himself or Herrera. So I had him on there as well, just in case that happens. The third guy I had was Fernando Salas for the Mets, because Addison Reed's a guy that I've read a little bit about. He could be on the move also with the Mets going nowhere fast. So he's a guy that could be next in line as well. But overall, there's not a lot of guys that I'm really all that high on. Brad Hand was a guy that I wanted to put down a few days ago, and then, you know, we saw the trade happen, and then now he's probably going to be dealt as well. But those are my three right there, with Barraclough probably being the guy I'm the most optimistic about, despite being put on the DL today.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what the timetable is on him. I don't know if hopefully he's not out too far. That takes me off because I picked him up as a handcuff a while ago. I actually spent money on him as a handcuff in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. Spent $11 on him.
That's still not as much as I spent on Austin Slater, so I don't want to hear it.
That is true. That is true. All of my guys have been mentioned already. I gave an honorable mention to Blake Treinen, Van, so I think that's a good sneaky call there. The A's clearly don't have anything to lose, although Casilla ain't helping himself out, and he just gave up two home runs back to back to blow a stupid game. Oh God.
Well, he's not very good. So how he's been a closer this long is beyond me.
That is true. And then Carter Capps, like I said, I've been stashing him away where I can. And then Bruce Rondon, I guess. Like, I've never, ever been a fan of his. And you said 100-mile-an-hour fastball. His velocity has actually gone way down since then. He's averaging, like, 96 on his fastball now, 96.5, something
what
like that.
What a loser.
I know. It's still really good, but it's not what it once was. And every time I see him in the box score, it's just like he's given up five earned runs. So I just have no confidence in him. But he has been pitching the eighth inning, and so I do think that he would be the first guy up whenever, like, if and when Justin Wilson is moved. And then there's Shane Green behind him. He's kind of the same as a Bruce Rondon, just walks the planet and gets hit around way too hard. Alex Wilson would probably be my favorite, but I don't know if he's, you know, necessarily going to get a chance anytime soon. So we'll see. Honestly, it's a pretty ugly bunch. It's a bit of a motley crew, I guess I would say.
Have the Tigers ever had a good closer? Ever in the history of baseball, aside from Ugeth Urbina?
What about Rod Beck?
Okay.
Tigers guy?
You sold me at Rod Beck. Yeah, he closed to the Tigers for a bit.
Yeah. So, I was just reading a couple of things here, bullpen related, and reading about my Rays here. It looks like they're one of the teams that's in on possibly Justin Wilson and A.J. Ramos, so that'll be interesting to see how that pans out with Alex Colome there. The other thing I wanted to throw in, too, is one of the other reasons I'm interested in Jake Patryka is he is a Indiana State alum as well as myself, and the great Lenny Melnick are also, so I wanted to throw that out also.
Nice.
Indiana State Sycamores, so.
Nice. Yeah. I might be meeting up with Lenny Melnick in a couple months. We'll see. He's going to be around my way.
He's going to be down, I think, in the Tampa area, so I'm going to see what I can do in November.
Well, I'm not, guys, so rub it in my face.
Oh, I will. That in the Pacific cooler in your hand. I'm going to suck it down. All right. I think we've done our work for this week. Anything you guys want to get out before we sign off?
Nope. Check us out, Big Guy Fantasy Sports. It's where we do all our written work. I do whatever the column is, hold or fold. Ron does the On Deck Circle, and Nate does Ice and Fire. Is that right?
Fire and Ice, but fire close and ice. Enough.
Close enough. So, yeah, so check us out there. You can find my written work on ButuInc.com. And I'm happy that you're listening to us, and I think you should check out our other podcast, the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Podcast.
Do it.
Agreed. You should. That's what all the cool kids are doing nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to throw out too, real quick, on BigGuyFantasySports.com. I'll be transitioning into some football stuff that I'll be doing. So I'm looking at right now, hopefully having some bye week options, preseason bye week options for your quarterbacks. Hopefully posted tomorrow, and then I'll be looking at the other positions as in the coming weeks, as far as early names kind of put on your radar. A lot can happen between now and week five when the buys start. But for you football people, that'll be up there. Go get the consistency guide. It's a fine piece of literature for wherever you do your reading at. And check me out later on in the month as the season winds down at Fantastics, along with Nate will be over there as well. So check us out.
Catch us outside. All right. Till next week. Till next week, folks. May the fantasy gods shine upon you.